Hi, I'm Dave Crane.
And I'm Joe Capaldi. Welcome to Turbocharger Brand TV.
Now, if you're like me, every couple of days you get a phone call from somebody you've never met before who knows your name and calls you up and says, "Hi, can I meet you? I'd like to talk to you all about your financial stuff." And it sets off alarm bells, and you get the cold sweat, and you're thinking, hold on, I don't know what to ask you. I know that I should be talking to you, but you scare me. I thought I'd save you a lot of grief by bringing in my friend, Joe Capaldi, one of the most experienced financial experts in Dubai, and getting him to lift the lid off all those questions and all those areas that you might have been thinking about, but were possibly too afraid to ask. So Joe, in terms of the different areas that people should consider, if you're running a business or your managerial status, or even if you get to a point where you're just about to have kids, there are lots of big questions that come up. What should people be asking?
Well, basically, I guess there are four or five main areas of concern that keep coming up time and again, Dave. The first one is, what's going to happen after I retire? You know, people are living longer and longer nowadays, and most of the audience watching this are likely to live into the 90s. They may even reach 100. That's the good news, but the bad news is they're likely to outlive their money. So that concerns a lot of people, and very few people are provided for this properly. The second main thing is, if you have kids, do you want them to go to private school? If not, would you like to help them through university? And that thing comes up all the time. You know, the cost of education for university can be $35,000 a year. Double it if you're talking Ivy League. And that needs planning for. But most parents just want to help their kids through university so that they don't come out of university with a millstone around their necks that is a student loan. The next area people always ask me about is, how can I get the best return from my investments or savings? And again, there are three components to this. One, getting a good investment return. Sure, that's important. But secondly, what are the charges related to the fund you invest in or the product you invest in? And the third thing is, even if you end up with a good investment return, taking those two factors into account, what tax is likely to be due in my homeland or elsewhere in the world if I go elsewhere? So these are three considerations regarding getting a good investment return that people need advice on. The next thing that comes up all the time is, what will happen if I fall sick? Many employers might have some sort of program that will cover your salary for 3 months, but then what? Or if you're a businessman or self-employed, do you have some other arrangement? So that comes up all the time. And finally, the old chestnut of life insurance. It's the fundamental of what I do, protecting people, if families, if the breadwinner dies, or businesses, if the key business owner dies, protecting the shareholders and other key people. So those, I guess, are the five main areas that people look at when they're looking for a financial advisor. They want somebody with expertise across the boards and those sort of things. Holistic financial planning, if you like, Dave.
What should people be looking at when it comes to making their retirement plans? Can you just put it out there? Should be looking at certain funds? What questions should you ask?
Well, the first thing people have to find is a trusted advisor that they can rely on. And you need to check out, vet the person that you're going to possibly be helping you with for many years to come. I know that when people look at me, they look at my LinkedIn profile, or maybe Google me and so on. It's important you check out the financial advisor, but even more important than that is the chemistry between people. You've got to feel you get on with that person, because they're hopefully going to be helping you stage by stage over the years to come. I mean, I sit down with all my clients once a quarter and review their investment savings and so on. So that kind of continuity is very important. There again, there's more to it than that, because the financial advisor will then have to be able to look at all these different areas I've mentioned, and you need to tell them what your priority is for today. You might be interested in educating your kids, but more important than that, you might want to protect your family if you die, first of all. All of these sort of things have to be dealt with step by step in order of your priorities.
So you're also handing your advice of your finances over to somebody who you don't know very well. What questions should you be asking then to whether that person is right or not? They've all got big smiles, they're all great to spend time over a coffee, but what should you be knowing?
Well, first of all, how long have you been in the business? What experience have you got? What qualifications have you got? Have you passed the financial planning exams, for example? What sort of organisation do you belong to? Is it a small brokerage? Is it a large firm? And are they regulated? And if so, by whom? Investor protection is something that's become more and more prevalent these days. So these are the sort of questions that you should ask a financial, a new possible financial advisor about himself. You know, I came from a meeting this morning with a lawyer who I met for the first time today, and boy, did he put me through my paces. He wanted to know how long I'd been in the business, what qualifications I had, was I regulated, and if so, by whom. And I welcomed that, because sadly, out there, especially in the offshore world, there are a lot of cowboys who are not properly qualified at all. So
which is better? Are you better going with a big firm or a small firm, or doesn't it make any difference?
I don't think it makes that much difference. It's the individual that you choose and his quality is more important than the firm that he chooses to associate himself with. You know, there's a saying, Mike is right, and bigger firms might sound better, but in actual fact, you can have rogue advisors in bigger firms. In fact, you're more likely to have, because they have so many consultants, perhaps, that there's good, more chance of there being a few bad ones in there. So really, the quality of the advisor rather than the company is far more important, in my view.
And in most cases, financial consultants are self-employed. So whether they're doing it under the umbrella of a big company or they're doing it in a smaller firm,
that's right.
They're still running their own business by being themselves.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And therefore, the more successful people will act as businessmen and not just as salesmen pushing financial products.
You're saying about the fact that people will be living longer in the future. What are the figures on that?
Well, basically, when we came to the millennium just 15 years ago, on average, men were living to 74 and women 79. It's now projected that by 2030, such a short space of time after it, the projection is that men will live to 85 and women will live to 87. So people are living longer and longer because of better medicine, better education, you know, better nutrition, etc. You've got a fund for that. It's going to be the longest holiday of your life, Dave, 30 years. Now, you know how much you've got to save up for a two-week holiday. Can you imagine how much you have to save for a 20-year holiday? And by the way, when you go on holiday, you don't plan to have huge healthcare bills. When you get older, guess what? Things start to fall off or go wrong. So it's not just about having enough money to last 30
there
years.
You go.
It's about having enough money to cover the healthcare. So you need to have a lot of money.
Or invest in a 3D printer where it replaces all the parts of your body, which is something I'm sure in 30 years' time you'll be able to buy. So moving on from retirement planning, what kind of figures should people be looking at then? If you're going to retire, what percentage do you need to save to get that back again or get some kind of reasonable living?
A rule of thumb should be 15 to 20% of saving. You know, the panacea of all pension plans in the past has been to get 2/3 of your final salary. Well, that number was usually arrived at by the company and the individual saving about 15% for 40 years. The employer might put in 10%, the employee 5%. That's how that, so therefore 15% is a minimum number, but because people are living longer, we need possibly to save even more than that. The numbers you've got to save are scary, but the prospect of not having saved afterwards is even scarier.
What are the questions people should be asking about education for kids?
Well, first of all, you hit the nail on the head. Is education going to be paid for, or are you going to have to fund it yourself? If education is paid for by the employer, if you're an expat, then fine. But that still leaves university education, and it always leads to that, because most people want their kids to go to college or university to get qualifications after school. And the cost of university education is quite high. But it's not just about the cost of the fees, there's the cost of the lodgings, there's the cost of the food and upkeep. All of that comes to something like £25,000 if you're an expat, $40,000, double it if you go to Ivy League, UCLA, Oxford, Cambridge, these sort of places. Most people, accepting the norm, have to save for about $40,000 a year, and that's in today's dollars. So we take Maya, your daughter, who's age 4. 14 years from now, you might like her to go to university. well, Dave, instead of it costing $40,000 a year, if we take 4% inflation, it could be $80,000. So you and I are going to have to sit down after this show and work out what you need to do to save for Maya's future.
Well, Maya could get a job starting now. So looking at education, that's a sobering thought for many people, especially if becoming an expat, because you generally have to look after the education, and it becomes even more scary if you've got more than one child. Two or three means everything becomes an even bigger figure, or you choose your favourite kid, which nobody wants to have to go through. So literally, wherever you are in the world, whatever you're doing, you're still going to have to keep an eye on your tax from your home country regardless.
Yeah, very few people will retire here in Dubai. It's a wonderful place to live and work, but eventually there are very few retirees here. Now that could change, but let's look at the majority. Majority of people will go back home, be it to Australia, New Zealand, Northern Scotland, and when they go back to their homelands, they will face some tax inevitably on the income or lump sums of their savings and investments. That can be mitigated for with the use of certain products, but again, I'm giving away some secrets here.
Ask your financial advisor exactly what the secrets are about, and you get a better idea.
That's right.
Okay, critical illness. You mentioned that before, about the fact that there's no real protection if you're a small business. Your health is everything. If you don't turn to work, nobody looks after you. And also, I mean, I looked into it because I run my own company. There just seems to be no real protection for you apart from having a nest egg that looks after you while you're out of work.
Yeah, that's true. And sadly, in certain parts of the offshore world, there aren't enough health insurance plans available of the right nature. But everywhere has a critical illness plan available. And let's just explain what a critical illness plan is to the audience here. A critical illness plan pays out if you catch some dread disease. Cancer, heart attack, stroke being the most common ones, but there are a whole plethora of other things such as Parkinson's, CJD, all of these multiple sclerosis, all of these sort of things. If one of these events happens to you, then the policy pays out. It used to be called living insurance when it first came out in the mid-80s in the UK. But basically, it's a very, very important thing. And what's more, you sitting here have a 1 in 7 chance of dying before 65, Dave. But you have a 1 in 3 chance of getting a critical illness. It's much more likely to happen. There's anyone in this audience watching today hasn't seen or known somebody that's had either had a heart disease, heart attack, or cancer. Think of a simple example.
So in those terms, what kind of finances should people be paying out for critical illness to protect yourself for your business?
Well, the golden rule I always say is make sure at least that your debts and mortgage are covered. For instance, Dave, if you were to have a heart attack, would you rather lose your home or lose your mortgage? You'd rather get rid of your mortgage, wouldn't you?
I think so, yeah.
And so make sure the critical illness is there. So God forbid you have a heart attack or a stroke or something, that the mortgage is cleared off, and at least you have your home is debt-free. That's the starting point. Get that covered first. Then you can look at enhancing it as it's affordable.
And now let's talk about the fifth of those areas, which is about life insurance and what you mentioned, key man insurance. What's key man insurance?
Well, basically, what key man insurance will do will pay out a lump sum to the business if the key man dies. So it might be a key director, a key employee who runs your whole IT system. Often it's the managing director who is the driving force behind the company. Take away that linchpin and the company often has a problem. It can affect the share value of the company. If there's a big key man policy in place, at least it can buy time to replace that person. Partnership insurance is another form of this, where let's say there are two partners in the business and one dies. What happens? Does the chap who's died widow become your partner? Most people wouldn't like that scenario. So, nor would the widow for that matter. So there should be cash here to sort that situation.
Basically out. To pay off your partner's debt so they disappear and you take over or you look for new partners.
Well, if you've got enough partnership protection in place, you should be able to own the business on your own outright. and pay out the widow of the partner his share and value of the business from the partnership protection issue.
And in terms of life insurance, what are the key questions you should be asking?
Well, what term does a life insurance need to run for? You know, there are two types of life insurance: whole of life, which has an investment element, and term insurance, which runs for a set term. Most people run their insurance in a way that their term insurance covers them until they're age 65. Because, generally speaking, if they've planned properly for retirement, then there should be enough money to cover everything after that. That's why you need a financial advisor that can look at the life insurance and the retirement planning in tandem to make sure they talk to each other. That's very important.
So there we have it. It's worthwhile going back to your financial consultant, picking up the phone and not pretending you're not in. And now you've got all the questions you really need to ask. The very best out for your future and for your family. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Dave.
And we'll catch up with you next time for more great insights, more great guests, and more things you need to know about for yourself and your business. Until we charge your brand, TV.